How'd you sleep last night? If you're anything like the 60 million Americans who suffer from a sleeping disorder, you tossed, and you turned, and you stared at the ceiling waiting for daylight. During a recent sleepless night of my own, I felt so worried that sleep would never come that lo and behold, it never did. Dr. Lawrence Epstein is with the Division of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School, and he's the former president of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Dr. Epstein, thanks for being here.
It's nice to be here.
So how'd you sleep last night?
Very well, thank you. And that's my story. I'm sticking with it.
Good. I'm glad. If anyone's going to sleep well, you will. But when does a sleepless night become something more than that, become something like insomnia?
Well, most everybody at some time in their life will have difficulty with sleep. In fact, the symptoms of insomnia are the most common sleep disorder, occurring up to about a third of the population at some point. But chronic insomnia, something that persists for a long period of time and affects how people feel and perform, it's about 8 to 10% of the population.
And what is a long period of time?
Usually more than a month. So ongoing problems, not only that you have trouble with sleep, but also that it affects how you feel and perform during the daytime.
What's going on in your head when you're lying there staring at the ceiling and you just can't sleep? What's actually happening in the brain?
Well, we have found that people who have insomnia seem to be a little bit different from people who don't. They have higher basal metabolic rates, higher heart rates. They tend to respond to stress by secreting higher levels of stress hormones, cortisol, norepinephrine. So they seem to be wired to respond a little more vigorously than other people do.
To stress.
To stress, to other situations that where it doesn't help to be stimulated, such as trying to go to sleep.
Yeah. What's the worst case of insomnia that you've ever seen in your career?
Well, I have people come in and tell me they haven't slept for weeks or months. Typically, however, if we were really to bring them in the laboratory, people sleep some. It would be very unusual. It's just that our perception of sleep is very poor. Both we don't understand whether or not we are asleep and how long we've slept. So we're not very good at detecting when we're affected by poor sleep.
Well, we talked a little bit about stress, and I want you to talk about that because, like I said, it does sort of become a self-fulfilling prophecy after a while. You sit there and you think, I'm not going to fall asleep. I'm not going to fall asleep. I can't believe I can't fall asleep. Oh my gosh, all the things I have to do tomorrow, it's going to go terribly.
Mm-hmm.
What is that anxiety? How do you cope with that?
When you use the term insomnia, it's kind of an umbrella term for a lot of different poor sleep patterns. So difficulty getting to sleep, difficulty staying asleep, early morning awakenings. And we see that people can develop this pattern in a variety of different ways. There are medical problems that contribute to it. There can be emotional problems. But there's also what we call learned insomnia. How can you learn to sleep poorly? Something similar to what you were describing. Something really bad happens. You lose your job. There's death in the family. Get very upset, and it's hard to sleep at that point. And if that goes on for a couple of days, as you start to go to bed, you're no longer thinking about that initial thing. It's, am I going to sleep tonight? I have to sleep tonight. If I don't sleep tonight, I'm going to feel bad. And that sort of winds you up and does the opposite of what you need to do to go to sleep, which is relax. And if that goes on long enough, then actually approaching the sleep environment can trigger that arousal response. And now it becomes very difficult to go to sleep. And it becomes a conditioned response, patterned or learned behavior. The trick to getting around that is to learn new patterns. You can actually learn how to relax, how to change your response to those environments so that you can again get into a pattern where you can relax and be able to fall off to sleep.
Okay, so how do you do that?
So there are two approaches to treating insomnia. One is with medication, and the other what are called behavioral therapies. And there are a whole group of techniques that are used, including things like relaxation techniques, making sure that the environment no longer triggers these responses by changing the environment so that you can again get back into a pattern of relax. You can actually learn to relax. And people know the examples of this. It's what meditation is and yoga and other things where you learn to relax. And once you can relax and bring down that arousal, the body's natural sleepiness will come out and help you get to sleep.
There is a lot of conversation, especially around this modern day and age when we have our cell phones and tablets right at our bedsides with us, that light coming from those screens can be really disruptive to our sleep. Is science proven that's true?
Yes. So light has two impacts on sleep. It stimulates you when you're exposed to it, and it shifts your sleep schedule later, so it's hard to go to sleep.
So what's your rule of thumb? No phone time, what, 20, 30, an hour before you go to bed?
The best would be to have yourself in a dark environment for a essentially once the sun goes down. That's how we're sort of built, realistically.
Really?
Realistically, what you'd like to start doing is a couple hours before sleep, turning down exposure to light, and particularly in the last hour before bedtime, you don't want exposure to bright light.
Yeah. Well, I want to bring in a piece of tape here. This is from Jimmy Fallon in The Tonight Show, because the idea of sleep came into the political the race for the White House here recently. And I'm not going to ask you about politics, but I do want to hear this, because it was reported a little while back that Donald Trump gets hardly any sleep at all.
And get this, it turns out that he usually gets only 4 hours of sleep a night. Yeah. Which explains why today he looked in the mirror and said, "You're tired. And you're unfortunate. You still look fantastic."
So, again, I'm not going to ask you about politics, but this does remind me that a lot of people will boast that they don't need a lot of sleep. They can survive on 4 hours a night. Is that true?
There is a range of sleep need. As with any sort of physiologic process, we see this bell-shaped curve of how much people need. The overwhelming majority of people are 7 hours or greater. There are a few people at the lower end. 4 hours would be very atypical. Lots of people who boast about not sleeping much at night, Thomas Edison would talk about this, other politicians. If you actually follow them through the course of the day, they're probably falling asleep a lot during the daytime because the body will make you get your sleep at some point. People do not perform at their best when they are sleep deprived. We talked already about how you see performance becoming impaired while judgment of it is not accurate. And you can monitor this in all sorts of ways. In fact, 24 hours of a daytime without sleep changes your cognitive performance to the same degree as a blood alcohol level of 0.1, which is above the legal limit in every state in the country.
Wow. So people might be thinking, if they have that much trouble sleeping, what else can they do about it? Of course, you have the option of supplements. You have the option of sleeping pills, something like Ambien. What do you recommend?
My preferred method is to start off with the behavioral methods, things that you can do to change and behaviors you can do that improve sleep. When you compare the two medication and behavioral techniques head to head, they're about equal in terms of their effectiveness, but the changes that come about are longer lasting through the behavioral techniques than through medication.
And people worry about medication being addictive.
Medication, all medications have side effects. Sleeping medications, you can develop tolerance and withdrawal from them if used for long periods of time and can affect cognitive functioning. So when I use medication, I try to use it at the lowest possible dose for the shortest period of time and couple them with these behavioral changes as a way to get longer lasting effects.
Well, we're all human here, even sleep doctors. What do you do when you can't sleep well? Do you get out of bed? Do you stop trying to sleep and just go do something else?
So one of the things that's recommended to, again, change the environment and your response to it is to avoid making bed a battleground, a place where you feel really bad and anxious. You want to reserve bed for sleep and intimacy only. So if you're lying in bed, rather than being annoyed and frustrated and pounding the pillow and disturbing your bed partner, get up, go out of bed, go someplace else. And now the living room where the couch is the place you don't want to be, and you really want to get back to the bedroom. And during that time, you do something that you find relaxing. So listening to music, reading, something that's calm. You know, don't get on the computer and play war games, and don't go searching for Pokemon Go, and do something that allow, again, your inherent sleepiness to come out. When you feel it, then you go back to bed and try and go back to sleep.
I have to say, my tactic is I leave the bed and I go to the couch, and it works almost every time.
And fall asleep on the couch?
Yeah.
I usually suggest people avoid falling asleep when they leave the bedroom, because then that becomes associated as the good place to sleep. And it's harder to fall asleep in your bed. So what you want to do is you want to go out, do something relaxing, get sleepy, and then go back to bed. So that's the reward to be able to get to go back to bed. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a good place for you to sleep.
All right. Dr. Lawrence Epstein is with the Division of Sleep Medicine at Harvard Medical School, and he's the former president of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Doctor, thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I got to say, I'm still reeling from the fact that I'm not allowed to sleep on the couch anymore. Like I said, we're all human here, so let's commiserate. What do you do when you can't sleep? What works? What doesn't? How desperate have you gotten? Let us know at hereandnow.org.